Okay, so home retreat, it's the first time for me. And as I was saying, probably for you as well, or many of you, not everybody, I think some of you have done. And so one of the idea of this is that let's use, because we cannot meet in proper retreat, let's say like physical meeting. So maybe it's also a good time to go deeper into how you're able to practice at home. So that maybe we can have this in mind, how we are not only participating to a one-day retreat, but also trying to integrate more the Dharma in our own home. Yeah. So yeah, keeping that in mind, I think is useful. So it's a long arch of three retreats. Each of them can be done individually, but there's a theme running through 3 months. So, and for those of you who registered for the 3 months, the idea is really to engage into practicing for 3 months as much as you can, or at least with a very good regularity, if you can. And we will explore a slightly different approach of our practice. And it's an approach that isn't so, we don't hear so much about that angle in the Dharma, that way of understanding the Dharma. So it may be that if you're very familiar with Buddhism, you will maybe not recognize exactly the match with what you already heard. So that's good to know, that just like be fresh and try to understand this approach and experiment with it and see how that lands in your practice, see how helpful it is. And it's very probably that over the 3 months we will explore three themes with one common thread. And maybe some of these themes will be more useful for you than other. Then that's what you will keep for your practice in the beginning. So I think the basic, the central part of the exploration here will be around how much the mind constructs reality. So that's a question that is very relevant, that we don't often ask. And the practice that we will learn, whether it is impermanence and the recognition of impermanence, anicca, or the next month will be dukkha, suffering, or anatta, non-self. Yeah, the three of them will have two different aims. One will be that through seeing impermanence, through seeing the dukkha aspect of life, the suffering aspect of life, or through seeing the non-self aspect of life, we will reach a certain letting go of the experience and quietness of the mind. That's one aspect. We will aim to experience a quieter mind, quieter and quieter and quieter. And that's what we, I think, always aim for in the Dharma in general. Yeah, but these three ways, when we understand them well and we're able to use them in the practice of meditation, they help us to really let go of all interest into experience for some time, for the time of the meditation, which means there is a natural quietness that settles down. That's one aspect. That's an aspect that is quite usual in the Dharma, the search for the peace of mind and recognition of the possibility of the peace of mind. And the other aspect that we will look into during the 3 months is through practicing these views, recognizing when the mind goes quieter and quieter, trying to sense and to become familiar and to understand which part of the reality is a construct, which part of the reality depends on the mind activity, and what happens when the mind activity goes down. Yeah, you see, so we go into meditation with this question. And the question of reality is a very, as I was saying, a very valid question that is not so often heard of. This is the same question that we find very much in physics. I've been interested in physics last years, and it's exactly the same question that we find in physics and that we find in the spiritual world. How can we know that what we perceive is real? How can we be sure that what we perceive is real? In philosophy also we hear a lot about this, like this cogito of Descartes, for instance, is based on that. That's the question. His question is, how is there anything that I can for sure consider as real? You know, so that's not a new question that we're coming up with. That's a timeless question. It's very much addressed in Buddhism and in Hinduism and other traditions that I don't know, but I know a little bit of these ones. But also it's now in Western philosophy, that's a basic question. And in physics and neuroscience, that for what I know, somehow, it's explored. So, and the interesting thing with physics is that I feel that it follows the history of physics, follows a little bit the history of at least my practice of meditation. Like in the beginning of physics, we have Aristotle, who, and many others, but I just quote the big names. And he's the base of many findings in physics, and it's all based on trying to formulate what is perceived, into formula that we can reproduce and predict, use for predictions. And so that's been running through a long time. But then we have, in the 17th century, we have something that some people consider the major shift in the human thinking that came with Galilei and some others. When Galilei, he came with a few discoveries that were made not based on sense observation, but made on logic and calculation. So for instance, Copernic made the calculation and realized through logic and mathematics that it's not the sun that is going around the earth, it's the opposite. So you see there, this is not something that we could have found with just pure observation. It needs logic to get to that realization. And many, through logic, many things about the nature of reality were discovered that would not be discovered if we would based our exploration and invest truth in what we sense, what we perceive. And then that has been, from Galilei on, 17th century, it has evolved more and more. The knowing of reality was done, actually less and less was done on trusting the senses and what we observe, and more was done through the understanding, the reflection, the calculation, the logic, And then, with calculation and logic, some experimentations were done. And these experimentations were proving that actually things are not the way we perceive them. And we're now in this very interesting century, since more than 100 years now, where the quantum physics has arrived. And this quantum physics is nobody can claim to understand that, but it is almost now totally abstract. The knowing of reality is totally counterintuitive to what we perceive. It is now not at all based on the senses, on perception. It is based on logic, calculation, mainly formulas. And the funny thing is, like, we can't even observe. Like the physician now, they cannot observe what they work with and what they try to explain. They cannot see it. They can experiment. So they make formulas, for instance, and with these formulas, they can do predictions. And these predictions finds to be correct. So they can create experiment and predict this is what will happen, and it does happen that way. Or, so that's one reason why it gains some trust. We gain some trust in these experiments, because we see that when we repeat them, they always give the same result. Even if, like, for instance, this matter on, like, there is this experience where there is the sending of these microparticles, and if there is a measurement, it will have one type of behaving as matter, and if there's no measurement, it will have a behaving as wave. Two different manifestation. Once measured, we cannot see with eyes, but once measured, it will, the behaving of it will be just like a small part of matter, and once not measured, it will behave like a wave. And this experiment has been said to be one of the most reliable, which means every time, or like a big proportion, big percentage of the time, it is like this, that it happened, and when we reproduce it again and again. So this is something we cannot see, but we can reproduce the experience. And based on that, so many things has been created. Like I was reading recently that it's now in all our computer technology, there is the use of these rules, of these findings. But these findings totally contradict our senses and our perception of reality. Totally. It's something totally different. So physicists now, I was reading that someone saying, if you want to be a good physician, you have to work against your brain. You have to work against everything that is intuitive. It goes against intuition. And so in the Dharma, there is something of that. If we really want to go deep in the exploration of self, time, and the world, then we will need to be able to open ourselves to the possibility that reality is very different than what we perceive. So in the beginning of my practice, and for so many years, it was more about, the idea was more to connect to things as they are, and with not elaborating somehow. So the mindfulness practice, when understood like this, it's beautiful. It's beautiful because you just come to your senses. You just perceive and try to prevent this natural tendency of adding thoughts and thoughts and thoughts on top of just bare perceptions. So we perceive things as they present somehow. without elaboration. What the Buddhists call papancha, adding its proliferation of thoughts. So when we practice this basic mindfulness approach, we actually diminish the agitation of the mind, so we diminish the construction. There is less construct. So when for instance, there's so many situations, like if we are, let's say, if I lose my key, and there will be the tendency to think that maybe it's someone else who took them, or what will happen if I don't find them, and all these concerns comes and prevent me from searching for my key. So mindfulness will say, when I lose my key, just stay with not engaging in all these construction that creates a whole world, and just staying with the search and seeing in every place, not engaging into the concerns about what will happen if, or this and that could have happened, but actually staying with just the actual search of the keys. That's just one example that comes like this. In all realms, if someone tells us, like, we have an argument, let's say, or just a few words with our partner, and maybe the whole day we construct a reality around it. And mindfulness would just tell us to stay with the bare sensation of what happened in this argument, and then maybe leave it aside. And if you're eating, just being with the taste of the food, and and so it does a lot of work. It does actually give rest to the mind. It to some extent diminish the construction. So many worlds are constructed, and so many experiences are constructed through proliferations of thoughts. So there is a peace of mind that comes. There is something very healthy for the mind and body. Less stress is created through this mindfulness. Coming back again to the present, for instance, is another way of saying it. And there's a huge amount of benefit to that practice. But it has some limitation, as Aristotle's physics has limitation, because it will help us to connect with the beauty of nature, it will help us to connect with the sense of self, it will help us to connect to the bare experience of things as we have them, but we cannot say that this is real. We cannot have a claim of reality of when we perceive something without adding extra thought, then this is, we are connected to what is real. So through that kind of basic mindfulness, we will not know reality. This is something that is very clear in the teachings of the Buddha. So in the teachings of the Buddha, for instance, that we hear things like perception is like a mirage. Something that appears to be so, but it's not. Perception is like a mirage. So what does it tell us? Perception is like a mirage. And there's a great emphasis on knowing the reality beyond its appearance. It's not only just connecting to the present moment will not do. So connecting to the present moment will help us to diminish the amount of construct to a certain extent, will give us a time of rest, peace of mind, lead to a certain wisdom, but will not go further than that. And we will have to reproduce again and again and again this coming back to the present moment in order to experience peace. One saint from Buddhism, Nagarjuna, said, without recourse to the ultimate truth, so that knowing of reality that is beyond what we perceive, nirvana is not attained. Nirvana, we can understand maybe freedom from misunderstanding. So there will be no freedom from misunderstanding, because often what is creating turmoil within ourselves is that the understanding that we have about what is real and not is wrong. Maybe I keep going, Chris, and then there'll be after the meditation there will be a time for commenting on. So that's what we're going to explore during this this 3 months exploration is the central question will be how much can we realize, how much is in our perception is a construction. What is this business of constructing? How much is the mind constructing our perceived reality? And there is no claim here of, first, I don't know the answer. That's my question also. And I don't know if someone knows the answer. Yeah, and if you go again in physics, then there are very big disagreements and arguments around that. Yeah, some people say in physics, yes, the world is totally objective. It does exist in that way, not depending on the way we perceive it. And some people disagree that, and then they understand differently the experimentations, even in the quantum world. In the neuroscience world, it seems somehow more commonly accepted, if I understand well, from a little bit of readings, that the neuroscience, they deal with the brain, right? They scan the brain and see what happened in the brain. And what they found is like, whatever, when we are conscious, aware of something, the moment it comes into our awareness, we know the moment of first contact with something, it has been perceived a little bit before, and the perception is coming through vibrations and through the different centers of the different senses. And then it goes in the brain in different parts of the brain before we perceive. You see, the moment all this vibration came in through the senses, goes in the brain, they go in different areas of the brain, and one is memory. So our senses, what we perceive, these vibrations are interpreted somehow by memory, that's what neuroscience says, and recreated in something that is in an image that is understandable, that makes sense, and that is usable. That's how the brain functions, it seems. So from that aspect, from neurosciences, it seems to go in the same direction of thinking that we don't have direct perception of that thing, but there's a work of reconstructing. And this work of reconstructing is done according to the architecture of the brain, because we don't have the same architecture with human brain or some animal brains. It's different. The species have developed differently and they reconstruct differently. So it's very difficult and I think naive to have a kind of a certainty that the way a cow see a tree is the same way as I see the tree or a fly, you know, because it's not a direct thing. It is reconstructed, yeah, somehow. So we cannot be sure that the reality out there that we perceive, all of it, does actually exist in that way. So in our practice, we can notice this process of constructing reality. it can be realized. So that's the second aim, as I was speaking about. One aim is quietness of mind. It may be like, as most of my practice was for most of this year, to come back to a very spacious sense of self with less and less identification, where the sense feels like very vast, quiet, sometimes luminous, spacious. Yeah, so these ways of looking that we will use will lead us there. But the other intention, and that's very important to know what are our intentions in practice, the other intention in this 3 months is to realize the process of constructing reality as much as we can. It's kind of a big project, but as much as we can, just already starting to understand that, oh yes, we can see that sometimes we construct a more solid reality and sometimes we do not construct that much of a solid reality. And in meditation, we can notice this. We can notice when there is a lot of resistance, papancha, and proliferation, then there is a very big, very much solid and felt reality, self, and the sense of time. These three things will be always in our exploration. The sense of self, the sense of object, construct, reality, and the sense of time. So we can notice in our practice that sometimes the sense of self, the sense of time, and the sense of perception, perceived objects, is very strong, very present. That's, let's say, if we are, anybody can understand that. If we are, when there is a moment where there is frustration, for instance, we really want something and we don't get it, and we just got the bad news that we won't have it, and this is really something we want, and there is a lot of frustration, then there is a very big solidity to the sense of self, the sense of that object that we want is so big and solid and separated from the rest. This is that, nothing else can do, this is that I want. So that becomes a real solid object. The sense of self around that object is very solid, and the sense of time is very much there in our craving for that object. So anybody can understand that. This is, the mind is constructing a very present, prominent self, time, and object. And there are other moments where the mind is more at rest, more normal, let's say. There's not that much of a heat. And the sense of self, time, and objects is less present in our experience. There's a scale there. And in meditation, we can go much deeper than what we can experience without that intention and coming back to the silence. In meditation, we can go into moments where there is very little sense of self. There is almost no desire, craving, wanting of anything. We're just sitting, and when the meditation goes well, we come to a certain stillness, inner stillness, body is still, body becomes light. There is not so much going on in the body. Also, the breath becomes more and more fine, not possible to perceive. The sense of self is not so much about Denis anymore, and the stories and the fatherhood and the role and what happened yesterday and what I'm going to do, my roles, objectives. All of this is gone in this moment. So all these aspects of the self are not there. The sense of time is very different, hard to explain in words, but very different. The way the time is perceived is, in these moments, it's less there. So all perceptions also goes down. There's less, it's not like this. What I'm pointing out is different than in practices of open awareness, for those of you who know, where we very much hear and perceive everything that goes outside and within. We're very finely aware of everything around and within. In what I'm describing, this is going down. We're less and less perceiving the outer and the inner. It comes to a vacuum. There is less and less perceptions. So perceptions and experience, perception is an experience, yeah? All experience go down. The sense of self equally and together goes down. And the sense of time equally together goes down. So one way to say it is that it's less perceived. Self, times, and objects, less perceived. The other way to saying it is it's less constructed. So science, philosophy, and spirituality balance always these. There are these two ways. One will say this is less perceived, and the other way will be it's less constructed. It makes a big difference. Less perceived means it's there, but I don't see it. Less constructed is means that when means more that when I'm not paying attention to these things, they do not in a certain way exist. And these questions are very fine. We should not like have a final decision about it and or believe in our actual understandings of it. Just keeping this question between I'm perceiving less or I'm creating less perception, you know? Let's be open to both. It doesn't really matter, actually. We don't have to decide. So in this month, we will use the impermanence point of view to let go of the seeking for experience, let's say. So it means we will pay attention to the coming, staying, and going of any experience in our meditation. And I'll speak about this after, also in our daily life. But in meditation, now we will take impermanence, inconstancy, as the object of meditation. So it will not be the breath, it will not be sounds, thoughts, whatever. It will be the very fact that things emerge, stay, and go. This is the object of meditation. Usually, in meditation, we become aware of this somehow because we're very still, and anything that we observe always have a beginning, lasting, and end. We become familiar with this as a byproduct almost. But here, it's not a byproduct. This will be the object. The object will be, I want to be aware, consciously notice anything that begin, last for some time, and end. Yes, so that we become more aware of that aspect of nature that is impermanent. That is not so difficult subject somehow. This is why we're starting here. Because impermanence, everybody can understand. Actually, we know that nothing lasts. Yeah, we may have some theories about, like in some spirituality, awareness is everlasting, or you know, or in Christianity that God is eternal, or you know, we may have this idea that something eternal. But we know also that in our experience, everything begins, last, and end. So intellectually, this is not a big leap. We'll have big leaps later. Yeah, just take some time. Big leaps will come. It's like the quantum, it's like the physics, yeah? Like the Aristotle physics was not a big leap. It was just Okay, so it's something that we can easily see in our reality. Yeah, after the Big Leap came with Galilei and then with the quantum. And in, as I was saying, it will come in our practice also with, when there will be dukkha, it will be a big, more understanding will be needed. And then when will be anatta and non-self, this will be totally counterintuitive. So that will be a big leap. For now, impermanence is not so counterintuitive. We kind of all know it already. But strangely, although we know it, we live as thing. It's not shown in our attitude to, in life, that it is integrated. Actually, it's not so much integrated. It takes a full life to integrate what means impermanence in our reality. This is why, for instance, we hear often in spiritual teachings, like the awareness of death. Yeah, the awareness of death is the awareness of impermanence. Everything is dying. Any moment that we live, beautiful or not beautiful, will die. But also the body at some point, the brain, and everything that we cherish so much will go, will die. So although we know this, we don't live as if we knew this fully. And knowing this more would be very freeing. I'm not going to engage into this because there has been so many beautiful teachings on it, and you heard probably some of them. But so impermanence is not so counterintuitive, yet it's not integrated in the way we live our life. So there will be a benefit into making awareness the object of our practice, because we will become more, it will become more integrated, more part of how we see life, more a reality for us. But that's not the only aim. The aim in meditation will be that through that way of looking, it will help us to let go of any experience that is there in the moment. Yeah, but by knowing it's, by having the focus on the nature, impermanent nature of all things, we are more likely to let go the things in our experience. We will less grasp something and hold for 45 minutes of meditation. There will be more possibility for things to come and go. And we will be more observing and sensing our own sense of presence, let's say. Still with, in the mind, the intention to realize this scale of, from the very intensely constructed to the almost not there, to the almost no self, to the almost no time, to the almost no perception. Yeah, we will explore this, and this use of observing impermanence will induce a letting go that enables us to go deeper into silence. I hope this makes enough sense.